Some good news to start the show today. Some not so good news to start the show today. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Denton Day sitting in for Kevin. That is not the good or the bad news. I guess that's depending, though.
It's news.
It's news, nonetheless. Kevin is back tomorrow from his week-long extravaganza. I don't know where he went. Do you know where he went?
No, he left for vacation when I got back, so we've kind of been playing a little...
ships in the night.
Yeah, we played a tag.
So Kevin will be back tomorrow. Good news and bad news? Do you have a preference, Max, on which one I give first? Are you a bad news first, then the good news?
Yeah, let's go bad first. Let's get that out of the way.
All right, the bad news. Brandon Coleman is not practicing today.
That is some bad news.
Limped off the field this weekend. Saturday practice. It was family day for the Commanders. He is not practicing today, so that's bad news.
Did you happen to see any of what happened? Because I know you're
out
there.
I did not see what happened.
Because I checked in with my source on all things O-line, and he has yet to respond.
Yeah, I didn't see anything with Brandon Coleman. Admittedly, when I was watching offensive line on Saturday, I was more focused on Connerly, which is something we will get to throughout the course of the show. So that's the bad news. No Brandon Coleman practicing today. This is the team's last practice in Ashburn before they go up to Foxborough, have a joint practice with New England on Wednesday, got walkthrough on Thursday, game on Friday. So really there's two good news, Max. Good news number one, it's game week for the Commanders. We are going to see real football. Not meaningful football, but real football. Probably won't see a lot of Jayden Daniels. But we will see real football, and we'll see him in the joint practice, which is exciting. But here's the actual good news that I wanted to start with. Deebo Samuel is practicing, and not just practicing, participating and rolling through 11-on-11s as if nothing had taken place on Saturday that would have stopped him.
Nothing did take
practicing.
Place.
Nothing took place.
It's not supposed to be reported.
According to Deebo, that's not how that works, unfortunately. Deebo gave somebody a death stare. I'll play that audio for you in a second. But Deebo injured his finger. I don't know. We never got an official diagnosis. A jammed finger versus a dislocated finger. Obviously, one of those is significantly worse. A dislocated finger takes a little bit longer to recover because you got to pop it back in place. You got to make sure your body's cool with it being popped back in place. It's this whole big situation, right? Whereas a jammed finger sucks. Throw some ice on that bad boy, and you can theoretically use it day or two later. No big issue, right? I was standing in front of the play that Deebo injured his finger on. It was the, you know what really sucked about that, Max? It was the third to last play of practice.
Oh.
It was the third to last play of practice. Goal line scenario, the ones are marching down the field. They were not taking on the ones on defense, which is something that we need to talk about, and we will today because it's a little bit of a problem. But they were taking on the seconds and the thirds on defense. Jayden looks for Deebo over the middle. A nice pass breakup by the DB, and then you could just tell immediately something was wrong with the hand. He's holding it. He's shaking it. Comes over to the sideline on the near field, which is like right where me and a collection of other media members were standing. Some expletives were shouted, which is never a good thing.
No.
Never a good thing. Some kids questioned the expletives because, again, it was right in front of the fans. Welcome to football, kids. And then the trainers worked on him a little bit, and there were some more expletives. But he is good to go. He's been catching some passes from Jayden and some 11-on-11s today. So he's good. He is situated. That's good news. You want Deebo healthy, especially if Terry's not out there. Because let me tell you, the pickings are slim when it comes to wide receivers. With no Terry and no Brown is not practicing today either. No Brown hasn't practiced a ton throughout training camp, which is a little unfortunate. Hopefully we get some meaningful Noah Brown reps after the Patriots game this upcoming Friday. I can't imagine that the first practice he will get thrown into is a joint practice. And I can't imagine, just with the way that they ramp guys up, that they're going to say, hey, you haven't practiced at all, go play in a preseason game. So hopefully we see Noah Brown next week. That's not intentionally where I was going to start today. It just so happened that because they are practicing today and we got that information prior to the show that I wanted to go there. I do want to start, though, Max, with something that took place on Friday that we had mentioned on the show. It's very, very important, but it wasn't confirmed on the show. It was a Friday news dump because it happened like at 4:30.
It took a long time.
It took a long time.
The entire show, and then we were like 2.5 hours into a 3-hour show with Doc, and then we got the news.
And then you got the news. I was hoping we were going to get it at like noon on Friday.
It would have been nice.
We got it at 4, and that is that the RFK site is full go for the Commanders. There was a bunch of like, really it was a bunch of political nonsense. I don't dabble too much into the ins and outs of the politics. I'm not ingrained in that enough to willingly speak on that. But I'm very much ingrained on the stadium coming back to where it is, or to where it was, rather, where it, I guess was kind of supposed to be, and then it wasn't for a little bit, and now it is going back. Washington coming back to RFK is a massive deal. I don't need to tell all of you this. Most of you are aware because most of you grew up going to games at RFK. But it is very big for people in the age bracket of myself, in the age bracket of Max, and some of the other hosts that you will hear on this network on 106.7. It is so nice that we can celebrate and get this stadium back to a place that feels like it's ours.
A home that isn't leaking sewage.
That's not leaking sewage.
It's not collapsing in on itself.
That's not collapsing on Jalen Hurts, although if you wanted to add something for that, I'd be down. If you want to collapse on him, that's fine. But it's just nice that you'll be able to have like a central location, but also a location that's easy to get to. For everybody?
Accessible by Metro, and you mean I don't have to walk a mile?
I can't tell you. So I had season tickets, my family did, in 2007. I had been to one game prior to that, but my family was like, you know what? We see that you're loving football. We're going to splurge. Let's get some season tickets, right? We have it. We've been on the wait list because that was at the time where there was a wait list. And we got some season tickets. And I remember the horrifying feeling getting off of a jammed Metro, because the Metro going to games is just packed out the wazoo, which is good.
Sardines in there.
It's good because people are going to games, or they were at that point. It sucked because I don't like being packed into Metros. Don't like it at 30 years old. Didn't like it at, 2007, I was 12. Didn't like it then. Don't like it now.
Fair.
And then getting off of the Metro and then having to walk a mile to go to the stadium to watch the game. We weren't going to drive. I've since driven after working there, doing the 980 street team back in like 2017. Drove there for a couple of games. I drove there once because I took my then wife, to a game last year. Although last year's extravaganza was not as terrible as it had been in years past. But getting there sucks. It's
never
tough
good.
To get to from the Beltway. I don't know that it'll be much better if you are driving once it gets back to RFK, because the parking situation is not going to be great, but it'll be so much easier to get to from the Metro, where everyone will be encouraged to do so. And it's just going to be so nice to have all of the teams that we cheer for on these stations. And if you are from here, that you cheer for in your day-to-day life, all in the same city, not three teams in DC, and then one all the way out there in Landover, or if Ted Leonsis had his thrill of it, multiple teams in Virginia, one in D.C., and then one in Maryland. Like, having all of them in one central spot, and then having a new state-of-the-art stadium, and this thing is going to be an absolute doozy. The Commanders are pledging an unprecedented $2.7 billion towards the project that'll include the 65,000-seat stadium. That'll also host concerts after football season. It'll probably get, I'm a wrestling fan, Max. It'll probably get a big-time WWE event. I mean, they just hosted a two-night SummerSlam in East Rutherford where the Giants and the Jets play.
So Tyrese got a very warm welcome.
Tyrese Halliburton did get a warm welcome, but imagine having that here in D.C. Imagine having a Final Four, men's or women's, in D.C., I don't know that a Super Bowl will get here. I think they like to get bigger stadiums, but Roger Goodell knows the history of D.C. and its significance to the NFL. So imagine getting a Super Bowl here in D.C. It's so much easier to have a Super Bowl, regardless of what the stadium was going to look like, even if it did end up in Maryland. Like, it could have been this Jerry World. It could have been, you know, SoFi, just like this new state-of-the-art, never-before-seen thing that was beautiful from top to bottom. It could have been all of those things. In Landover, that sucks. in D.C., it's so much easier to justify holding a Super Bowl here. I was at the Super Bowl, as you know, Max, in New Orleans. Having everything centrally located in one city where you can stay at a hotel that is within reasonable walking distance to the stadium, that is also within reasonable walking distance to the convention center where Media Row was held for the Super Bowl, that is also reasonable walking distance to Bourbon Street, the trifecta of all of the things that you wanted, that is now something that will be readily available in D.C. You can stay around the stadium. You can get there easily. So all of the events that are going to come, if you love Taylor Swift, you probably hate Northwest Field because Taylor Swift hates Northwest Field. She ditched it. She said when she's doing her world tour, she's like, I'm not going to Landover. I'm not going to do that. So if you were a Swiftie, you had to take your talents and your money elsewhere.
Philadelphia.
It's going to be so nice to bring all of that, one, that money back into D.C., mm-hmm. but then just have it be an actual like place where you want to be. On top of that, this project is also going to feature 60,000 or 6,000, not 60. Jeez Louise, I can't read today, Max.
Be a lot.
6,000 housing units with 1,800 affordable housing units. It'll have retail space and community benefits agreements with $50 million or more. The agreement also includes close to $1 billion in public funds and around $1 billion in tax breaks for the Commanders. So it's a huge Commanders investment into the city. D.C. will be paying, you know, some of that as well. But compared to a lot of the other stadiums across the NFL, it's going to be a lot more of the Josh Harris group's money than it will be D.C.'s money. All things very, very positive. And I can't wait to see once this is actually up and running, how beautiful it's going to look, what that area is going to look like. Those of you that have been around long enough to know when the Nationals were playing at RFK and then they built this stadium in Southeast that we are like two football fields away from, the way that this area was then built up was tremendous because it was now a destination and a place to be. So I'm excited to see how that area around the current RFK site is going to change and allow for more people to live in that area, allow for there to be affordable housing in that area, and just then generally be a place to hang out. Because even if there's not a Nats game, like this Navy Yard area is a nice place to hang out. There's like some, it's not like a pool, but there's like some water activities for kids if you live in the city that are not too far away from us. You can get right up on the water if you're someone like me who likes to run, and I like running up against water, even if the Potomac is a little grody. A lot of grody.
Doesn't change the breeze, though.
Does not change the breeze, though. And it's been a hot summer. We know. Air conditioning last week broken. Hot as hell in here. Summer's
still
hot.
Still broken.
Still broken, by the way. But it's nice to, like, Navy Yard is now, like, an actual place where you can, like, hang out and have a good time. So I'm excited to see what that area is going to look like at the RFK campus once this stadium is built. And then, again, you're getting the team back to D.C. And it will feel like it is home again. You guys know this. We all know this. This is a football town first. Even though there's been a large portion of the fan base that, because of the Snyder stuff towards the end, has grown largely apathetic, because of the name change, has grown largely apathetic, having this stadium in D.C., state-of-the-art stadium, now building a winner, and then who knows what happens by 2030, 2031, whenever this thing is fully functioning, what the name of the team is then, I think it's going to be very, very fun, a very fun period to be around DC sports when that all comes back. And then not to mention, Max, we got the draft in 2 years. So it is like this long ramp up to getting the Commanders back into D.C. You get the draft on the National Mall in 27, and then a couple years later, hopefully with some banners to hang, you get RFK Stadium site in a brand new stadium for all of us to enjoy. All double thumbs up from me. I do want to play something, though. So Josh Harris put out an official statement late on Friday after the deal was official. At training camp on Saturday, Dan Quinn talks before practice, and he started his media availability with like a pre-written statement thanking Josh Harris, acknowledging Josh Harris and all of the owners in that group for working hard and doing it the right way of getting RFK back to DC. That was a written statement. At the end of his media availability, we got a little bit more of like Dan Quinn's personality on this. So a question was asked to end the media availability on Saturday about his personal thoughts as a historian of the NFL with the stadium coming back to RFK. And I want you to listen not only to what he's saying, but just how he sounds during this clip.
Remember when the team played in D.C.? What's it like for you to presumptively be the head coach of this team if and when it returns back to its home?
Yeah, I know these guys have been working incredibly hard, man. Like, this is a lot of big steps, you know, that they're putting together. So as much as I think about down the road, I also think about the work that's going in, like, right now. And the type of, you know, attitude it takes to stand up and fight for what you want. So I haven't thought much about down the road, but I think at this point, gratitude for Josh and his team to, like, make this happen. I always have a real appreciation for people that put in the work. And obviously this takes a lot of work to do that. I wish I had coached at RFK. I didn't. But I saw it a lot. And as a, you know, member of this, you know, organization, the DMV, and so for all former Redskins, you know, Redskins, Commanders, everybody, like, there's that energy about it. So I'll leave it till then. But in this moment, I appreciate the work it takes to get to that next step.
And one thing that I do want to mention while he's talking about this, you can't hear or you can't see it, obviously, because we're an audio first medium. But the look on his face and the brightness behind his eyes is one of, like, really genuine excitement and happiness that they're coming back to RFK.
Smiling ear to ear. That was the first time I tweeted this on Saturday. If you're not following me at the Den Day on Twitter, I tweeted this on Saturday. That was the first time I think I have ever heard Dan Quinn legitimately giddy about something non-Jaden Daniels related. You know, it's very easy to be giddy about, like, your quarterbacks, especially last year. Like, it was very, very easy. But there was, like, a genuine excitement, as you mentioned. He was smiling ear to ear. There was, like, a difference in him answering that from a guy that knows the NFL, that's been around the NFL, that understands the importance of this particular franchise playing in this particular city, versus at the beginning was just a written statement. The written statement was nice. I don't have any, you know, it's not like I didn't want to play the written statement. It was just very basic. It was coach speak. It was PR speak. Well, that second answer that we just played, that was not PR speak. That was like, this is so fun that that stadium is going to come back. I don't know if he's going to be the coach by then. I mean, look, man, that's like 5-6 years down the road. Hopefully, if he's still the coach by then, it means things have gone really, really well. And I would like things to go really, really well. But very, very fun stuff and a very, very good thing to be happening.
B-Mitch and Finley, 106.7 The Fan, live in New England, Foxborough, Massachusetts. We are at Commanders Patriots joint practices, and man, the action's heating up. Jaden Daniels going deep. First real deep shot we've seen taken into triple coverage. Just nothing there. I think that was to Debo B.
He just barely missed it.
I mean, I'm not mad at the shot.
Looked like that dude could run, though. Number one, Debo Samuels, the one that's supposed to be fat. He can run, man.
I think that has been disproven.
He frankly was out front.
He sure has been. Hey, Jeff, I think maybe be ready to run some. We're having a little power issue all of a sudden. I'm not really sure why. But B and I are up here. They're back in the pistol formation. Jaden Daniels, Brian Robinson behind him. Two tight ends out to the right side. Bates and then Sennett got downhill to seal that side up, man. That looked pretty good. Sennett get to that second level fast.
B-Rob looking good, man. B-Rob faster this year.
Yeah, man.
Swift.
As much as we've all been talking about Bill, rightfully so, Bill's had a really good camp. I think none of that means B-Rob and Eckler don't have big roles.
Well, I can tell you one thing about both of those guys. They're competitors. And if they hear a lot of talk, you know what they do? I got to go make something happen.
I think for all the talk of Josh Connerly, Brandon Coleman didn't make the trip. So you've got Andrew Wiley at that left guard spot. Connerly's been all right. I think Connerly's more than held his own.
He has.
What do you know? Another first down catch for Zach Ertz. I mean,
all he does is make plays,
though. Dude, he's just a machine, man. B, what has been standing out for you the most so far?
Well, looking at the offensive line, I came up here to look at the O-line and D-line, and I think both of them are doing very well, especially the offensive line. Tunsil, the guy who they put the most into, has come here, and he's hit the ground running just like he did in Houston. Wiley moving over to guard, he's very, very capable at that job too. Tyler Biotis at center been doing some good things. Allegretti was at the left side last year. Now he's over to the right side. I just think that the depth of the O-line is far better than what we thought it would be. And I think that's going to help because last year when the first original five got banged up, we saw the running game fall off.
Totally.
But right now it's not happening like that. You know, they have legitimate guys, and they have two guys who's banged up now. When Cosme gets healthy, Coleman gets healthy, you have legitimate guys. I think they can go eight deep, possibly nine deep, of having legitimate guys that can go out there that's very, very capable.
Well, and with Biadasz last year, when he went down, was a major problem for them. I think – have you noticed Allegretti getting some work as a center? I think they'd love if – now, Dieter's going to be on the roster. Dieter was able to play last year, but
– Dieter's also backup snapper. I think Allegretti also, to me, he has done center. He's been a center before.
Right.
And, you know, we used to hear about that position flex thing. We just need guys that can play.
Right.
And whatever position if they have to. And I think that now they have guys who can play multiple positions, it'd be fine with them. So –
you're adding an all-pro left tackle. Like, it's funny because I don't think we've seen it a lot. Oh, my man. Yo, Griffin is just saving the day. Shout out to Odyssey Boston again. What show do you work on?
Jones and Keefe.
What is it?
Jones and Keefe.
93.7. Listen, when you get done listening to us, listen to Jones and Keefe, all right?
Yeah, we need to get JP a better way of –
That is not my fault, dude.
Transporting that stuff.
How is that my fault?
Because if it's bent up, it gets some little cracks in it.
You could – yes.
I'm just helping you out.
I'll send you the invoice later.
Send it to CK.
I know how we
– So you could carry that – you're in charge of the power cord from here on out.
No, I'm not in charge of the power cord because you go more places than me. If I'm in charge of the power cord, you will never have it.
I don't know what happened there. It looks
completely... It got a short into it.
Well, whatever. We got probably power. So yeah. We're not too worried about it. We're back in practice. Josh Johnson in at quarterback. On the far side, the defense has been going a lot. Let's try to notice when Drake May's out there and kind of identify the
I've seen a few
team.
Big plays over there.
Yeah, I mean – the thing with Drake May, I believe we are past the place last year where, like, you had the Drake maniacs, the folks that, like, wanted to root against Jaden because they picked a side pre-draft, which was just so stupid. I don't know if you agree with me. The Commanders and the Patriots basically exist in different football orbits.
Totally.
Maybe they play every 4 years or something.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm rooting for Drake May. I think it'd be awesome. The more awesome young quarterbacks, the better pro football is.
Yep.
I like his skill set. He seems.
I'm
like
looking for the day that we have 32 of them.
I mean, good luck.
I mean, it seemed to have 10, and that's it.
You know, that's my theory why spring football will never really catch on. There's not enough good quarterbacks for the NFL. Like, when you're playing spring football and stuff, it's
yeah,
just.
Yeah, but see, spring football catches on, Jay, because the expectation is lower.
No. You know why it's going to work now? Because people need television inventory to let people bet on.
Yeah, but still, I'm just
gambling
saying,
is why it's going to work now.
Like,
but the product will never be as good.
It won't be as good, but college football isn't as good. It don't have a better quarterback, but it's way more exciting. But I think you just when you get to the NFL, you expect some level of perfection. And I think a lot of coaches don't know how to get the best out of players. And then I think a lot of the best quarterbacks don't even get a chance to play in the NFL.
If you don't do it, that's so stupid.
Yeah, because if you're not a certain height, not a certain weight, don't go to the proper university. And this, that, and the other, you don't get a chance. And then if you get a walk-on possibility, you don't damn sure get a chance. They don't put you out on the field. And if you are better than the person they pick in the first round, they damn sure not letting that happen.
Sure.
I just give Pete Carroll a lot of credit when he moved Russell Wilson ahead of
Matt Flynn. Gave a bunch of cash to.
Totally.
Yeah. Looks like a little break in the 11-on-11 action here. Offensive line warming up closest to us. You know, be trying to figure out that group. We can get to probably 7 or 8 guys that are definitively on the roster. I mean, just go through your starting five, right? Tunsil, Coleman, Biadasz, Cosme, Connerly.
Yep.
Okay.
Wiley Allegretti. I think you're going to have my man on there. Trent Scott can play everything.
Trent Scott.
He has a great opportunity.
That's 8.
What's my man?
Dieter. A true backup center.
Some reason,
that's
man.
9.
Some mean. Big boy. Chris Paul always around, bro.
Yeah. Well, I also.
Because he's dense.
He is dense. You
can't
remember
get
that?
Moved, dog.
That was a former
front
office.
How about Good Jones? Good Jones is a guy, he just seemed to hold on.
Are there guys, knowing, I mean, you're not going to see Tunsil Not going to see Coleman. He didn't even make the trip. I wouldn't be shocked if Biotis doesn't go Friday night. Are there some of these down the roster O linemen you want to keep an eye on Friday night?
I'm looking at all of them, to be honest with you, man, because you never know who that ninth, possibly tenth guy is going to be. Was it Yang? He came later on in the training camp.
Yeah.
You know, they signed
got,
like, him.
The big boy McKay, I think they signed, yep, too.
So I'm wondering if either one of those guys can show up, bro. So it's just – It's amazing how that just sticks with you, all these names.
Totally.
When you're around this thing all the time.
Totally. It looks like we're going to see – this looks like live punts here. Do you read that the same way I do?
I don't think it's going to be live.
Who's out? I don't see a jugs machine.
Yeah, they're going to punt them, but, I mean, it's not going to be live return.
Not live, but who is fielding it? I mean, it's a live rush on it.
Oh, they got a punter kicking on the side. The punter in the middle is not kicking.
Who is that on the return, Osborne or is that Lane? On the depth chart, they do have Osborne as the top returner.
That was Lane.
That looked like Lane, right?
That was Lane there.
I think the Osborne listed as the top punt returner is just kind of DQ's philosophy of nobody gets anything for free. I think Jalen Lane is very much sealed
up. I am
up.
Going to lean in on that one and say, I think I don't worry about that.
Yeah, I agree with that. On the far side, you've got Tress standing there. But if he's not live punting, look, New England must have two punters, B. Because
that's what I'm saying. The punter on the right side is kicking.
Right, but Tress on the far field, they have a jugs machine set up next to him. Although he punted that one.
Yeah. They go back and forth.
Okay. It's good special teams work. They always kind of divide this up. Typical practice, you go 11s early, kind of set the tone, then some special teams work, and then you come back to 11s just to kind of break it up a little bit, keep everything moving. I think when you're doing joints like this, it's a good idea to do some 11s, then break it up, and then come back because maybe that keeps tempers calmer.
I want – now, we have a left-footed punter, and this is what Bill Belichick used to do. Bill Belichick had left-footed punters most times. Most teams had right-footed punters, and he felt that left-footed punter was going to give them 3 to 5 muff punts a year. We have a left-footed punter. Now you got a right-footed punter kicking to the guys. I wonder if that little different spin is throwing them off right now.
Have they been muffing them?
No, they're not muffing them. I'm just wondering if it's throwing them off a little bit. They seem to be catching the right-footed punter punts a lot easier than they do Tress's in practice.
Well, when Tress is doing the directional stuff, I think that's particularly difficult.
But if that's what you see every day, you get accustomed to it.
Yeah.
Like, if I had a left-footed punter, I would probably catch it more to my left side, left center. The right-footed punter comes a different way, like a draw, basically. And I would catch it more right center.
Interesting.
You know, and I wonder just if you never adjust where you catch the ball, does it affect you when you see the ball coming from a different angle?
It looks like on the far field, that looked like some live gunner work for the Washington side. I mean, they're not going to tackle, but the Pats don't even seem to have gunners going. Have you noticed that? Like on the outside here, it's kind of just they're focused on the rush. I think it's helpful for Washington that New England has two punters, so all these punts are live. That looked like a full block.
That would have been in trouble right there. But you got to realize Larry Izzo used to be up here,
right?
And Larry Izzo is a maniac when it comes to special teams. Those guys they take on the personality of the coach and. There are a lot of core guys that can play special teams that I think are going to end up making the team because of that capability. The guys that can't play special teams and not really, really doing much, start looking for somewhere else, bro.
Dude, you got to wear a lot of hats. Regardless of the job, regardless of the field of work, the more you can do, the better off you are, dude, period.
Yep, that's it.
But, B, do you see it? It's interesting. On the right side over there, gunners going down the field.
But see, it's different.
I think they divided it
up. They're working the gunners on that field. They're working the interior on this field.
Well, and it's both teams. Like, you've got Pats and Commanders gunners over there.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder that's
a gunners drill right there. This drill over here is punt block.
Well,
punt block and punt rush.
I wonder if they'll flip it so the Commanders have to work punt block.
They'll do it eventually.
Yeah.
But right now, this is this is all about, on this side, it's all about the punt team and the punt rush team, punt team of New England and the punt rush team of Commanders.
Sure. And look, they just flipped the actual kicker here to the left side, and you see all the returners are lined up on the left side. It's just interesting to see how they go through their day and, like, the process of it. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's I think for a lot of folks it would be – I think a lot of folks don't realize how, like, detailed – minute-to-minute planned out these practices are and how intentional everything is.
Those coaches have had some conversation way prior to this week to figure all this stuff out. And they probably incorporated the different ways that both teams do it.
Now,
see, you saw how he caught that ball. He took three steps backwards before he started forward.
I know you don't like that.
I hate that. Take that first step forward, because right there you allowed – those three steps backwards allowed the guys to get 10 to 15 yards closer to you.
Sure, because it's three steps for them running full speed downfield.
Hell yeah.
I'm curious. So you see the little clock down in that left corner, B, saying a minute 40 left. If that's the ninth period, I think they're only going 14 periods today.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's the ninth period, means 10, 11, 12, 13. Because I think the last period, the 14th, is kind of a cool down. So I think we should be in line here for some pretty solid work. I also think it's not a coincidence that the Pats' starting offense is on that far side where the stands are built.
Yeah, yeah.
So all the New England people get to watch that.
Yeah.
And all the people up here in the rafters with us are watching the Commanders. B, you know who I just saw?
Who?
You know how New England has those, like, I mean, forgive me, I'm not going to know what to call these dudes. They're dressed up like soldiers from the Revolutionary War, and they carry those like muskets or whatever. I just saw those dudes walking around down there. Gotta be hot wearing that. I think the temperatures are quite pleasant, but
mascots.
Those are straight up like pantaloons, man. I don't think they breathe much.
Listen, not none of that stuff works, but it's cool here.
It's real cool.
So that's one thing that they have up here that I can be thankful for, the coolness.
Dude, this morning I was up early. It was like cool out. You know what else is supposed to be an issue, but I haven't really noticed it. I'm curious if you think so. There's bad fires in Canada again, and I know in, like, the city of Boston it's been an issue, and it does look
a little hazy up top.
Especially whatever direction that is that west? That looks hazy that way. But I don't feel it breathing. Do you?
No, I don't. I don't even smell it. Because, like, I know last year, 2 years ago when they had that, you could still smell it. Remember, even all the way down to D.C.
Dude, it was – remember you and I went and played golf because we were like, this is nothing. And then the next day I felt like crap.
You did.
It felt like I got like an allergy attack basically. All right, we got some movement here. Looks like the special teams portion – ooh, B, we might get one-on-ones right in front of us, O-line, D-line.
That's what you want to see.
I'm here for that for sure.
Yeah. Washington O-line right here.
Washington O-line right here. Looks like,
and then one-on-one over there for the receivers and DBs.
Yeah, it looks like Washington D-line is going to that far goal line to match up over there. Jaden about midfield here. This could be fun, B. Watch some DB stuff. Now, before anybody gets too excited or draws any conclusions from one-on-ones, especially wide receiver DBs, please keep in mind that is incredibly one-sided. It is incredibly hard. Actually, that looks like it's going to be 7-on-7 down there, don't you think?
I don't know.
I mean, it feels like I see some linebackers, some bigger fellas than just
if you see linebackers, then it will be.
Our plan today
those
is,
are safeties.
You don't think on the far side here, I'm saying?
Far down there. It looked like more like safeties to me.
All right, well, we'll find out here in a moment. For anybody looking to – yeah, Jeff, you got me laughing in the text thread. So Ben Volen is a friend. Ben Volen's actually a Churchill High School grad, a Maryland native. He covers the whole league for the Boston Globe, but he's here at practice. I saw him this morning. Ben Volen tweeted out, Jaden Daniels is absolutely surgical in 11-on-11. Never misses a read. It's accurate, dude. I mean,
yep.
I think the league – or Boston today, New England, is seeing what we've seen all camp. Yeah, that's 7-on-7.
Yeah, 7-on-7.
Jaden, end zone, just outside of reach. 7-on-7, if a play gets past 3-4 seconds, it's kind of dead anyway. Mm-hmm. We do have one-on-ones going right here in front of us. A little interior work. Wiley more than held his own on that. I think it's going to be a lot of fun because we'll get back to 11s. Let's do this. Quick break. Nobody go anywhere. B. Mitchell Finley live. Foxborough, Massachusetts. Commanders, Patriots, joint practice.
Commanders fans, it's your boy B. Mitch here, and I'm ready to take the excitement global. So join me and True Fan Travel this November for the ultimate fan getaway as Washington takes over Spain. Complete with game tickets, all-inclusive tailgate parties, 5 nights at the Westin Madrid Cusco, and curated local events across Madrid. Spots are limited, so head to truefantravel.com and lock in your seat. Use promo code HAIL100. That's HAIL100 for $100 off. True Fan Travel. They handle everything, and you make the memories. That's truefantravel.com. Tell them B-Mitch sent you.
The question we're going to have as our poll of the day on Grant and Danny today, you've got to buy stock in one of the two camp standouts on offense in this Commanders rookie class. Wide receiver Jalen Lane out of Virginia Tech, or Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt, who has been the talk of camp, the running back out of Arizona, who was taken in the 7th round, who played in just one college game last year, or else he probably would have been drafted a lot higher. I think just about everybody acknowledges that. He had a weird technicality that led to a suspension that probably shouldn't have happened via the NCAA.
Yeah, you heard about what the exact reason was.
Yeah, it's a strange story.
I mean, it's terrible with just basically a clerical error at an HBCU where he gave his number to someone else and they just assumed that it was him, so he was ruled ineligible. That is a horrible situation for him. Now, luckily, he ended up in Washington, but I would be causing a little more of a fuss if I were him because you just cost me money. If I'm going from like a 7th rounder, potentially 3rd or 4th rounder, it's big time money difference.
Yeah, if I'm his agent, I'm certainly making some phone calls about that. But here's the question. We'll open up the listener lines on this for you right now at 800-636-1067. I think it's better if we just talk about buying stock and you could define it short or long term, however you want to play the
sure.
game. It doesn't have to be for this rookie season. I think it could just be in the grand scheme of things, in the big picture of this organization. You get to put some money down on the stock of one of these two players. Who you're rolling with? Krosky-Merritt or Jalen Lane?
So it's funny because if my hat were backwards, you'd know my answer immediately, right? Toki Altizer, you already know where he's going with the former Hokie, Jalen Lane. But the hat is forward. Because I'm looking at the short term here personally, I think that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt is going to have a spectacular rookie season where by the middle to end of the year, we're looking at him as the feature back. And you're still going to have Brian Robinson involved in some short yardage stuff. You're still going to have Eckler as a third down back. But 15 carries, the 12 to 15 carry guy, the guy that's going to get the most work as the running back, I could see that being Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt. And so even though I think that Jalen Lane probably has the better overall career in the long run, and I think he has a 10-plus year NFL career where he's playing with this team, hopefully for all 10 years, but if not, he's kind of bouncing around or going to other places and being a nice piece, whether it's as a number two receiver, a third receiver, or a gadget guy, whatever it may be. You know, I've talked about how versatile Jalen Lane can be. I think that in the immediate future, specifically for this season, I think that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt could end up being the lead back versus I don't know that Jalen Lane at any point this season ever gets higher than wide receiver 3. So I'll take Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt.
Yeah, it'd be stunning if he did. And frankly, if he got to wide receiver 3, that would be a huge win for Jalen Lane. But it's also not realistic necessarily, even if there's a path and we have laid it out. It's not realistic that Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt ends up being the leading running back either, right? I think a lot of people are wish casting that.
No, I think that can happen.
It can happen, sure. A lot of things could happen, but the odds of it are not very good. You're getting plus 400 on that because Brian Robinson is someone that they have had the opportunity, had they wanted to move on from, to do that, and they haven't. They could have supplanted him with Chris Rodriguez, who's kind of a similar version of him. They have not done that. There's also the fact that and it's different roles and it's different types of backs, but you know Austin Eckler's going to be on the field on a lot of passing downs, mm-hmm. on a lot of 2 and 4 minute. He's going to have a substantial role in this offense. He was actually pretty effective last year. I think they were trying to spell him and not overuse him. First and second down running the football, but he was much more efficient in terms of yards per attempt and some of the explosives that he hit than Brian Robinson. So there are at least two veterans that they have sunk energy and time and invested into as a staff. Eckler, who they brought in free agency, and then Robinson, who not their guy. They didn't draft him in the third round. The Marty Party did back in 2022. But they have had multiple off seasons to replace him as the RB1, and they have chosen not to do that for whatever reason. That said, I'm going to make the argument for Jalen Lane because I actually would buy stock in him. The easiest first point to make is that Terry McLaurin is a no-show. Now, when he shows back up, he gets his number one rollback. Like that, clockwork, get back on the field and go get your 7-8 targets a game and make 5 or 6 catches in week one. But until he's back, Toby, as much as we're all assuming that he is not going to miss any game time because he's going to be fined $811,000 if he misses games, we have to at least leave that open as a possibility. Because currently, even if you don't believe it, and I don't, he and his agent are floating this idea that they will not be playing football, right? So, number one, I'll just start with, we have to act as if McLaurin might not be on the field. And if that's true, Noah Brown right now is unavailable coming back from an injury. Deebo Samuel is your wide receiver one. You and I have talked a lot about the fact that he is not a traditional wideout. Now, I do think, let's just, as an aside, talk Deebo for a second. I actually think they're going to use him a lot more like he was used a couple years ago in San Francisco with Kyle Shanahan as a wide receiver than as a gadget guy. Because maybe we just don't see a lot of this. I don't know that I've seen him get a handoff at training camp.
No.
I've not really seen him line up in the backfield as a running back like he did in San Fran all the time, or as a personal protector in shotgun, something he did constantly. They haven't really done any of that while we're out there. It's mostly, you know, the craziest it gets is like him in motion or jet or orbit or something behind the line of scrimmage. But by and large, they put him out there. He lines up out wide. He catches something behind the line of scrimmage or on a little slant or on a drag route. That's kind of how they're using him.
Yeah, I can recall one time he was in the backfield in a little funky formation that they've used Robinson and Eckler in before. So he's been in the backfield like that situation, but very, very few times. As a matter of fact, it's been almost, you just see this guy lining up in the slot or in motion more so than not or on the outside. He's kind of playing, you would think, a traditional receiver role with the occasional, oh, okay, you're just doing something funky like the Cowboys use CeeDee Lamb in the backfield sometimes, right, just to get a matchup. It's more that nature versus the old Deebo role, which was the wide back or whatever you want to call it, running receiver, what, you know, the mixture. He's kind of more just true receiver.
But that having been said, because that's how they've used him, I think we're in lockstep. There is this possibility that when the season starts, they're doing some stuff when we're not there. There's plenty of days where the media is not around, where practice is closed, and or they just have installs that are still coming closer to the regular season with the good stuff, where maybe Deebo is used more in that Samuel-friendly wideback role, so to speak, right? And if that's the case, now you're talking about taking even more reps at wide receiver away from him. He's also just not durable. He might play in 15 games. He's going to be healthy based on what we know for like 11 or 12 of them tops, right? So I think this is a position group where there is some crumbs to be found. Like, there is food in the cupboard that you can unearth here if you're Jalen Lane. And that gets me finally to the camp that he's had. I think he has been their best wide receiver in training camp, not named Deebo Samuel. And I'm not even willing to say that Samuel's been more impressive, because Debo's a Pro Bowler, all-pro type. You expect him to be good. Like, nobody has actually taken me aback more than Jalen Lane. When he gets on the field, he makes plays, he gets open, he routes people up, he's twitchy, he runs a sub-4.440. So I am a big believer. I'm buying him, Tobes. I get stock in one guy. He's also going to be a punt returner and play special teams right away. I think Jalen Lane helps them early on this fall. And long term, I just like what I've seen. He looks to me like an NFL receiver. I said this, I think, on Monday. I was talking to Adam Kilgore of the Post, and he said it might be his number and his size. He goes, but tell me what you think about this. I think he's got some Tyler Lockett to him. And I was like, huh. It probably is the number, and it probably is his size, but I totally get that. If he has that kind of career, let's all do cartwheels. But I'm a Jalen Lane guy.
Yeah, and I mean, you like the mentality this kid has. He's been calling Brian Mitchell, trying to get some pointers on returning kicks and all that stuff. So he's got the right, he's got his head screwed on right. He understands learning from guys and doing everything he can to get better in that sense. And I think in terms of receiver, like I've said before, I think he could be their most versatile alongside Debo in terms of what he can do, where he can run down the field, which he didn't do a lot of at Tech. He can do a little bit of everything, whether you want to get him a quick screen on a bubble, whether you want to throw him a shallow, whatever it may be. He can kind of do a little bit of everything. But the reason that I go with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, again, Grant, is I know it's a little far-fetched to think that he's going to take over, but they needed an explosive back. They needed someone that, when they're running the read option, it's not handed off to the plotter that might break one tackle and get me 5 yards. I need a guy that if he breaks a tackle, he's going 50. And we've seen that from Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt. And he can bounce and look. This is maybe a little bit of an overreaction to early camp. We haven't seen him in pads. We haven't seen him take live reps. They haven't played a preseason game yet.
Well, in fairness, my takes on Jalen Lane are almost certainly an overreaction to early camp, too.
And that's going to happen, right?
That's all we got. But that's all we can do right now is watch practice.
Exactly. And so from what I've seen with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, he's impressive enough as a running back that I think as the season wears on, this isn't something that happens week one. This isn't something that happens week two. But as it goes on, you know, week five, he gets 5 carries and he's like, oh, okay, maybe I'll start involving him a little bit more. And all of a sudden, towards the end of the year, this guy's getting 10, 12, maybe even up to 15 carries as the lead guy. Because when I'm running a read option with Jaden and they're playing Jaden, I want a guy that can also take it to the house. B-Rob is solid. He'll get you 5 yards, but I can live with that as my second guy. I want the first guy on my offense as a running back. When I hand him the ball, I want him to be a home run hitter, especially in this offense, and I think Kroski-Merritt has that.
Well, I'd kill for 5 at a B-Rob. The problem is he'll get you 3.7,
well,
generally speaking. But yes, I mean, he is a singles hitter who could occasionally drive a ball into the gap for a double. I have longed for a home run threat. I don't even need a home run hitter. Doesn't need to be Adam Dunn, right? But I need someone who could just hit the ball over the fence. And I think he's got that club in the bag, and they have not had that back in a while. So I'm with you. I'm pulling for Merritt. I'm all in on trying to get him more opportunities. I would definitely spend this preseason feeding him, getting him ready, getting him in shape. And he would get touches for me in week one if it seems like he is worthy and you know, capable in that way, because it's the only way you're going to find out is to give him the chances. Why not? I just like the ability to get up the field. It just seems like he does everything a little bit quicker with a little more urgency. Everything is sudden. There's an aggressiveness, an explosiveness to his game. So I both of these guys, to me, and I'm sure you're high on Lane as well. Correct. As I am on Merritt, should be able to help them. But this is the question we're posing to you guys right now. You can hop in if you'd like on our Metropolitan Moving and Storage poll of the day at 800-636-1067, 800-636-1067. And go vote on our Twitter account, Metropolitan Moving and Storage, local, long distance, residential, 3 decades of moving the DMV. Let them do your heavy lifting and take it to the house. More at dcmetropolitanmoving.com. Who would you buy stock in of the two rookies here on offense? Wide receiver Jalen Lane or running back Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt? Here's what I find really interesting. I would have assumed when we posed this as a poll that everyone would have gone Merritt because he's been the talk of camp and he seems like a fan favorite. Right now, 55% are saying Jalen Lane, 45% are saying Merritt. Is that about McLaurin? Like, what do you take out of that?
I think it's partially everybody loves Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt, but he's a 7th rounder, right? Like, it's the, okay, this is a nice story versus a 4th round receiver. Okay, that's just a round behind where Terry McLaurin was, and look what he turned out to be. And also, maybe for this area, a little more familiarity with Jalen Lane, having watched this kid at Virginia Tech. He's electric. I think any Tech fan that watched this team over the last couple of years could tell you that when he was taken in the 4th round, whether it was here or anywhere else, they thought he could be a good NFL wide receiver. So I think there's a little bit of that as well.
He was taken 28 picks after where Luke McCaffrey went last year. And I'm not trying to come down on Luke, who I think's actually had a pretty good training camp, but there has not been a sequence of practices in camp where McCaffrey has stood out to me in any way like Lane has in the last calendar week or so before they went to Foxborough. You know, 10 or so days leading up to their departure for this joint practice. And we're going to catch up with John Keim at some point in the back half of the show, somewhere in the 5 o'clock hour, who was out there today. I want to ask if Lane stood out, because this was a significant test for guys like him and Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt and Trey Amos, the young guys on this team, in trying to determine and find out, like, okay, So you routed up some of the corners you've been going against every single day. You've memorized their tendencies. You know what defenses and coverages you're getting. You know, how do you look when you play New England? It's going to be a different scenario. But the problem with my answer on Lane is this. If McLaurin comes back, then you might not see a lot of Jalen Lane early in the season. We've also seen with this coaching staff that being a very young wide receiver makes it a little bit more complicated to get on the field. They were more willing last year to go with Olamide Zaccheaus than the guys that they drafted. They would rather have trotted out Jamison Crowder, who they claimed and brought back, than, say, a Luke McCaffrey. So they're not just going to put you out there because you were drafted in the fourth round.
Yeah, and I really like him for his versatility, but if you're just going to throw him out there for his ability to make stuff happen after the catch, it's a little redundant when that's what Deebo Samuel was brought here to do, right? I mean, if you're going to say, which of these guys would I rather throw a screen to, Jalen Lane or Deebo Samuel, both are good options, but you didn't bring Deebo Samuel here for Jalen Lane to be the one getting those balls, right? I think there's an opportunity for both those guys to be on the field, but also with Noah Brown out there, Noah Brown's a much better blocker, right? He's someone that you can depend on the outside to block. We saw a play earlier in training camp where Jalen Lane was out there, and he was asked to block Mikey Samristil, and Mikey Samristil, if they would have been full pads, would have put him on his butt. So he's not going to be able to block for a Deebo Samuel like a Noah Brown can. So in those sorts of situations, who's going to be on the field in the three wide receiver set? Noah Brown, Deebo, and Terry. So to your point, it, you know, maybe he runs into some situations, but I also think there's a possibility, again, by the end of the year, as these guys grow, that you could have Deebo on one side, Jalen Lane on the other, and it's a similar type of gravitational pull where you have to be ready for a screen for either one of those guys, and one of them's motioning, whatever you're doing. You can get really frisky with the offense by using both of those guys in
so
a similar
different role.
Like
Debo's going to rely on physicality, violence, running through dudes, running into dudes, pinballing off of people. Lane, it's just wiggle. You know, it is quickness. One of these guys you can't touch in a phone booth. I mean, he ran a 4.34 40 at the combine. 4.34 is 40-yard dash time. And to your point, I think he's listed 5'10". I'm not even sure if he's, you know, a true 5'10 without cleats on. He's not a big guy at all. He's not particularly heavy either. But that's coaching, is to make sure. I don't want that guy blocking necessarily as the guy that has to make sure a play works, that he's going to pin a corner and get him to the sideline. Like, when he's on the field, it doesn't mean every single time he's got to be running routes. That would be a tell that doesn't work. But you just can't ask that a play is dead or alive based on him being able to win in a blocking assignment.
And one of the difficult things, too, is he struggled against press coverage was one of the things coming out, and he primarily works out of the slot. And again, if you're running a three wide receiver set and your outside guys are Terry and Noah Brown, who's your slot guy? Deebo. And Debo's worked a lot in the slot in training camp, so he's going to have to supplant some ways there, whether it's Deebo goes outside and he works in the slot. There's definitely some interference where early on in the year, he's probably going to work as that fourth receiver. But if he's kind of rotating, depending upon what they're trying to do with that third receiver with Noah Brown, I think there's absolutely a way that he could be very, very impactful right away. And just some ways that you can move guys around the football field. And I think having him and Deebo in the offense together allows them to be really, really unique in the way that they can run stuff.
Happy Tuesday morning, friends. We are the Junks. We're coming to you live on 106.7 The Fan, Team 980 on the AM side, 910 The Fan in Richmond, and Monumental Sports Network 2. We're brought to you by Crop Metcalf, the official heating and cooling company of the Junkies. If you're looking to be the next five-star HVAC technician or plumber, just go to cropmetcalf.com. You can join their team today. Got a three-man Junks team this Tuesday morning. I'm Cakes at Money Metal Cakes is where you find me on Twitter, at Cakes Flops on Instagram. I'm joined by Eric Pickle sitting right there.
Good morning. How are you?
Hello. I'm doing well. Jason Bishop sitting right there.
Morning, Cakes.
Directly across from me.
Good morning, Cakesy.
Good morning, Jason. There's an empty seat diagonal to me. That's where John Paul Flynn usually sits, but he is on a very expensive European vacation. As we speak. I believe he will be back next week.
And then you be gone.
I'll be gone. I will be heading down south, down I-95.
You go.
To the great state of South Kakalaki.
Are you going to do anything different on this trip? It'll be the exact same trip every
anything
year.
Anything different? Let me see. Is there anything different? Probably not a lot different.
Are you staying in the same house that you usually stay in?
No, we'll be in a house we've never stayed in.
All right, that's cool.
So that, I guess that is different.
That's different.
I think it's two doors down from a house we've stayed in before.
Uh-huh.
So it's close,
yeah,
but it's not going to be the exact same.
How far in advance do you secure the house?
Generally.
Like in January?
Generally 6 to 9 months prior.
Yeah.
Just to make sure we have a spot that we like.
Right.
They do tend to fill up.
Right.
Yep.
So, yeah, I will be departing nice and early Saturday morning, probably. I'd like to be on the road by 4 a.m.
Right.
To get through just a lot of that Northern Virginia traffic gauntlet.
It's a long drive.
I think at 4 you'll be fine.
I think I should be fine. Yeah. I think I should be good.
It's a long drive.
Because that'll get you through Richmond.
I should get to the through the Occoquan, no problem. Generally, there's always a backup near the Occoquan.
But at
6 in the morning or 5:30 in the morning,
you'll be
whenever
cruising.
I hit that spot, it should be good.
You'll be fine.
Should be nice and clear.
It's about 9 hours to get to Kiowa, right?
Yeah, that's without stops, yeah. But there, of course, stops.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got to stop.
A 9-hour trip, you got to stop probably three times.
At least 2 to 3 times.
Especially all the soda intake that you're involved
in. There's a good amount of that, yeah.
Yeah.
I try to temper it while I'm driving.
You know, my hack always, whenever I drive up north and go, you know, it's my kids' games is the little energy drinks. Or the little energy shot.
Like 5-hour energies, yeah.
5-hour energies mm-hmm. are the guy that.
Don't sleep energies.
Don't sleep,
yeah,
right.
Those two.
Those little shots.
Yeah, they can help.
Because they keep you awake.
Mm-hmm.
And then
not a lot of liquid.
You don't have to pee-pee.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very important.
Right.
Mike Moore's back.
He is. Good for him.
He came in. He was all loud.
Yeah.
I know. I don't know how loud.
He's just very energetic.
I know.
He shot out of a cannon.
He's got a lot of energy.
I always tie it back, the morning energy, just to the music. It's all about the playlist walking in here.
You mean hearing the same song for 30 years?
No. Not Enter Sandman.
Yeah.
In my own.
His personal playlist. What was on the playlist this morning?
I'm on an Ozzy Osbourne kick, man, for the last month.
Yeah, you are on an Ozzy kick. That is true.
Ozzy tribute.
I can't kick the Ozzy kick yet.
You know what? That's okay. You're late to the party, but you're always welcome. It's fine.
Yeah, I feel bad. Just
drink it in.
It kind of took for him passing away for me to discover a lot of his bangers that he had.
Like Shot in the Dark, I had to kind of guide you to that.
Better late than never.
Yeah, of course. It's all good.
Did you? What was your big weekend? I can't remember. Did you guys have a house party?
Yeah, we had a house party on Saturday.
Right? How'd that go?
Great time. I was actually back in Leesburg getting dinner with my family, and then I got back to my house at like 8 o'clock. Crib was packed out, and then we went and got drinks for a little bit. Went back to the house at like 10:30, 11.
Right.
And then just shut it down until like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Oh man, that is so late.
Yeah, it was way too late.
How many zins?
A lot of zins. And then we all woke up Sunday morning. There was people passed out everywhere downstairs. So we went and got bagels in a couple different cars and then kind of just laid low yesterday.
Right. The recovery day.
Yeah, watched a movie. It's a good time.
An old movie or a relatively new movie?
Old movie, classic comedy.
Yeah.
Other Guys.
Wasn't he doing a movie review bit for us?
He was
for a while.
It's kind of disappeared.
Yeah, what happened to that?
You were
watching like an old movie, like a Shawshank or something?
Well, so how it kind of ended was I was watching old school movies, and then there was a movie that I wanted to watch, but Draven Valdez told me that you guys hadn't seen it, so it wouldn't have been a good movie to review.
Okay.
Because, I mean, I'm not putting it on them, but that's just what happened.
Fine. What movie is that?
It was Dumb and Dumber. It was the last one.
Mm.
And you guys didn't really like remember it much either, so it didn't really like have a good back and forth.
Nobody saw the sequel to Dumb and Dumber. Is that what you're talking about? You're talking about Dumb and Dumber 2 or the original?
No, it was the first one.
The original.
Yeah,
I love the original. I don't know if the other guys in the room are into it, but that was I love that
Karen,
movie.
I thought we told Mike to watch Dumb and Dumber because what he wanted to watch, you guys definitely hadn't seen or care about. But I don't remember, but it did kind of...
It died
quickly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Might need to bring it back.
Well, we were doing this bit where Mike was trying to...
Find his niche?
No, tell the story of the movie without telling you guys what movie it was.
Yeah.
It just got really convoluted.
Yeah, all right. Some things are better like as an idea than they are in
the
actual...
They're better conceptually?
Yeah, in the execution.
And they were just all old movies.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it could have been a little bit different. You know, what could have been?
But that's it's kind of a funny bit that a kid your age, you know, is watching some movies from 30, 35 years ago... And you just have no exposure to them.
Hmm.
I'm cool with it.
Yeah, I've been on a documentary run the last couple weeks.
You have your docs guy?
With like the Netflix Untold series. I was talking to EB about it last week. Like I watched Shooting Guards Which was the Javaris Crittenton, Gilbert Arenas one.
Yeah,
and
we
then
talked about that.
The Michigan Signs Stealer, Johnny Manziel's documentary, which you guys actually had a little cameo in, which was kind of shocking.
Right, right, right. That was a good one. Shouldn't be shocking. Icons in the industry.
Not shocking, but
thank you.
I mean, it was so funny. Like, they're just talking about, like, how Johnny Manziel's life, like, went off the rails, and then it just cuts to EB out of nowhere. I had to do a double take, and he's like, yeah, this guy's a disaster. It was funny, though.
I like Johnny. I was rooting for Johnny coming out. Just didn't have. What a freak athlete. Just didn't happen.
He just had beef with somebody on Twitter like this just within the last few days. Drab, can you remind me of who it is?
Gilly from Philadelphia, the podcaster, comedian, huge Gilly the Kid. Which was weird because it wasn't even shot at Manziel.
Right, but I can understand like somebody who's played in the NFL taking exception to Gilly's behavior. For those who don't know, Gilly, I guess, is this mega, he's a huge like Eagles fan.
Yeah.
And somebody brought the Lombardi Trophy to like a gathering. I don't know who brought it.
It was his birthday party, and I think Gilly was hammered. So he was just talking ass.
Yeah, he was just firing it like Cam Newton, saying, Cam Newton, you don't have one of these or something. And people are like losing their minds. Like, who are you? You're just a loser.
It went back to the Jalen Hurts Cam Newton debate from last week. Gilly was like, you don't got one of these.
Right. I mean, like,
acting like Gilly was like on the team or something.
I mean, can you imagine?
And Manziel saw it and said, I'm going to smack the ass out of you.
Can you imagine if the Commanders won a Super Bowl and Jaden Daniels brings you the trophy, EB, and you've never played a down for the Commanders, and you're just talking smack against like legendary NFL quarterbacks.
Right.
It's not a great look.
Wouldn't happen.
It's not the best look.
Wouldn't happen.
Yes, because I did see Johnny Manziel popping up on my timeline.
I'm sure.
What's he doing now?
Oh, I have no idea.
I think he's just living a life.
I think he's just hanging out with his bros, kind of like Mike Marr. He's kind of like living Mike Marr's life, but I think he's drinking way more.
Yeah.
Drinking way more than Mike Moore?
A lot more. It would be my guess.
You know, you mentioned Jaden. I'm sure you guys saw the video where he was there with Saquon and was it Justin Jefferson? And they were referencing the Hail Mary. And out of nowhere, Jalen acknowledged that he did it with a broken rib.
I mean, we all knew he had a rib injury. We didn't know
it was broken.
But, I mean, we all knew.
They were like, wow, what'd you do with that? 65 yards? He goes, yeah, with a broke rib.
So how long was that broken, do you think?
I think like at least for a month while they were wrapping it.
Multiple weeks.
And everything. I don't know if anybody followed up and asked them.
Heals if you're still playing.
Yeah, it probably never fully healed. Yeah.
They were being coy. They weren't being honest about that. He was coming over to the sideline and they were wrapping him. And clearly there was something going on. They were limiting him there for a few weeks. Give him credit. He was tough as nails and out there and played through it.
Jason, do you know how personally devastating it was to me? Because I started Jaden, of course, in my high stakes league the day that he ran for like the 60 yarder against the Panthers, like on the first possession, I think, or the second possession.
Yeah.
And then he had to come out of the game.
Then he came out of the game, yeah.
It's just devastating.
I know.
I had a hole in my soul that day.
And you lost that game.
Well, yeah.
When your quarterback
leaves 5 minutes into the game, you're generally not going to fare very well.
No, you're right.
I was concerned about his health for him. But I was more concerned about my matchup, let's be honest.
Which you should. Which you should care about.
Yeah, I was being selfish.
Any news?
We kind of knew that there was something.
No, we definitely knew something was going on. 100%. They were wrapping him. I mean, clearly, they're trying to act like, you know.
Yeah.
I can't remember what their line was at the time, but they were not being honest.
They didn't talk about it.
Yeah. And I take him at his word. That he broke his rib. His rib was cracked or something wasn't right. I think they referenced something, but it was very, I don't know. It didn't sound as severe as it probably was. But give him credit. Guy balled out.
He's a gamer.
In the middle of it all.
That's what he does.
I watched the pressers with Cliff and with Joe Witt Jr. yesterday. I'm ready for some real bullets to be flying here, Cakes.
No, I mean, you're going to get some fake bullets flying on Friday night.
Yeah. Well, I guess they say more of it will happen tomorrow.
Yeah.
The scrimmage. The Friday night's going to be more twos and threes, threes and fours.
Right.
Going to see a lot of Josh Johnson and Sam Hartman.
Yep. Getting ready to see a lot of backups.
But you know what? That's better than just watching them practice against each other every day.
I agree.
I I think I said heading into last year, I am not going to
just not gonna make fun of preseason.
Not going to go hard against preseason because it just means we're getting closer and closer to the real thing.
Right.
It's just a step in the process, and we just have to accept it. And that's what we're doing.
August 5th.
Yeah. All right, coming up on the show today, we will be joined by Mike Lombardi. He's the GM of the North Carolina Tar Heels football program. He's promoting the fact that his book is going to paperback, Football Done Right, Setting the Record Straight on the Coaches, Players, and History of the NFL. So he will join us coming up at 8 o'clock. We'll do the Junk Sports page next here on The Fan.